Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. We're talking tomatoes, and we're taking your calls, 410-662-8780, toll-free 866-661-9310. If you're shy and want to email a question, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org, and we have a few email questions to get to later in the program. Cindy, how about the one young lady who went to school in Spain? Reminds me how much I love your gazpacho. Talk about your gazpacho recipe.
Okay. One of the things about making the gazpacho, it's very important that you're using the whole tomato, and you want to capture all the juice that hits your cutting board. So be conscious of that from the very beginning. So again, wash your tomatoes well. I use a variety of tomatoes.
Let me back you up 1 second. Everyone usually cuts things up and then gets rid of the liquid. But what you're saying is the most important thing is to retain the liquid when you mm-hmm. When you slice the tomatoes, chop the tomatoes, dice the tomatoes.
You need that for
so
your
maybe
soup.
Even one of those cutting boards that has a channel for mm-hmm. when you carve meat is a good
or
thing.
Or even as you're cutting, you know, keep constantly pushing your product as you chopped it into a bowl. You know, so you're constantly kind
with
of cleaning
juice.
Your board with the juice, right? So you have maybe like pink brandy wines, certainly German stripies, which are my absolute favorite, purple crims.
All three pretty easy to find varietals of heirloom tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. So you have this group of tomatoes, different flavors, different acid sugar levels, and just start chopping. And I would say it's about 85% tomato. I put a tiny bit of freshly chopped shallot in. You know, if I'm making enough soup for four people, I would probably just put one. That would give you maybe two tablespoons of, or two shallots, a tablespoon of finely chopped shallot. A little bit of
not
fresh...
not even for any texture, just really for perfume.
Exactly. And a little bit of fresh basil. So you can either snip the basil with your scissors, or if you have a very, very sharp knife, you know, basil is very delicate. So if you have a dull knife, you're just going to bruise it when you cut it. So you need a very sharp knife, chop it, probably fine. I prefer it. I don't, you know, we sometimes use a chiffonade sometimes with herbs, which is you would actually roll the leaf and cut it down the length of the leaf.
So you get ribbons.
Yeah, you would have ribbons. And I don't think that's appropriate in the soup because it's kind of weird in your mouth. So finely chopped, a little bit of chervil, if you like chervil, and you can find it. It's not very easy to find, but it's like a French version of parsley. It's very delicate, very pretty in flavor. And I add a little bit of lime juice, a little bit of lemon juice, salt, pepper. And then for the peppers that are traditionally in gazpacho, I actually put Tabasco in. So I put a few drops of Tabasco in rather than using peppers. Or if I was going to put peppers in, I would use poblanos. I would do a very, very fine dice of the poblano. And then I actually add cucumber to it as well. So I peel the cucumber. If you have an Asian mandolin or any type of mandolin, it makes it an easy job of doing a very nice, fine Brunoise of the cucumber. Cucumber also adds moisture to the soup because cucumber has such a high water content.
The cucumber is a genius of your version to me.
I love that in there.
Because the texture, it makes the tomato really essential because you have these little bursts of, you know, crunchy, mm-hmm. bright texture.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, here comes your great extra virgin olive oil. So I would definitely use something pretty. And since it is a traditionally Spanish dish, if you can find a great Spanish extra virgin olive oil, yeah. That's what I would use. Or
you want something arbequina, most likely.
Exactly. Right? And I also do use Southern Provençal French extra virgin olive oil. And like I said, I think I said salt and pepper. So, and that's what finishes it. If you feel like you don't have quite enough moisture in your soup, but you don't need that much, you could add a tiny bit of water. But I hate that. I really, really want to get the juice from the tomato. You could also go another route if you felt you didn't have quite enough juice. You could puree one of your tomatoes, pass it through a strainer, and add the juice from the tomato. But this is such a bright, beautiful dish that has, you know, all this just, I mean, it's just one of the most, you know, amazing things to eat when it's prepared beautifully. And of course, you have to make it fresh and eat it pretty well right away, you know, within an hour or two. This is not something that will be nice the next day. The tomatoes will completely, you know, start to break down. And
it's not something you make and are going to have it. If you have it super cold for a long period of time, the texture ends up being destroyed.
Right. Right. Well, you really don't want to refrigerate a tomato. And of course, we do want the soup to be cold.
So. Yeah, that's probably one overriding thing we haven't jumped on enough mm-hmm. is do not put tomatoes in your refrigerator.
Right, right.
You
Never.
Want them cool. Tomatoes, wine, and chocolate all kind of do best at 55.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have a couple more questions to get to. Jackie in Baltimore City has questions about technical questions about tomato. Go ahead, Jackie. How are you?
Oh, wow. You spoke about smelling the tomato stem. Would you say more about that? And my second question is, when I've got my tomatoes on the counter, not in the refrigerator,
good.
Which way is best to have them, with the stem up or the stem side down?
So I'll deal with your second question first. You want the stem down. If they're not split, if they're going to leak, have an issue, have a problem, it's going to go through that stem. If they end up being – one of the other things that you want to do is store them where there's not a lot of light. If you store them stem up where there is light, you will end up getting some kind of growth or mold or weird bacterium stuff going on in that stem. The smelling the stem, to me, that's always the – like Cindy said, it's a nightshade plant. So the stronger that stem smells like that plant in the sun, the more flavor – when that tomato ripens up, the more flavor that tomato is going to have. It's not going to tell you if it's ripe or not. Texture will tell you that. And actually smelling the flesh will tell you that. But how intensely flavored it's going to be has a lot to do with how intensely aromatic that warm nightshade plant aroma is of that stem.
Hmm. Well, it's still growing.
So let it grow.
No. Do you smell the stem while it's growing?
No. I mean, you pick it when it looks like it's becoming ripe, but it's still a little firm, and then let it ripen up in good condition.
No, I'm talking about, when do you smell the stem and where do you smell it?
Once it's picked, when you're choosing it. Like if you're in the market and you're going down a table and you're looking at a whole bunch of different tomatoes.
Okay.
That's honestly what you do. Same as like if you're looking at melons, you would pat a melon to get a sense of how ripe it was by listening to how liquid the sound was inside of it.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Jackie.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jackie. And Chuck in Hamden. Chuck, we hear you have an incredible technique to get flavor out of oregano.
Yeah. First off, I love homegrown tomatoes. Now, one thing I haven't heard you talk about was putting a drop of vinegar on tomatoes. And that's what I dearly love. Raspberry vinegar or a good cider vinegar, just one or two drops on each slice. And then salt and pepper, basil or oregano. And unfortunately, this technique works best with dried oregano. And what you do is, if you're growing oregano in your herb garden, as the plant starts putting up the shoots for the flowers, as soon as you start seeing those little purple slipper flowers, cut the flowers off and put them in a brown paper bag, like a lunch bag, with the stem, the cut end of the stem up, and let it dry. And that oregano, when you run it through a sieve, will be 10 times as floral and 10 times the amount of flavor that you'll get from the rest of the plant.
So if I make this dish and use a lot of vinegar and a lot of this supercharged oregano, then I'm going to be thinking it's Chuck's supercharged tomato dish.
There you go, Chuck. That sounds good.
Thank you very much for the call. So we have one or two email questions of Sin that came in. So mm-hmm. I'm going to hit you with those. The really good question, Dave in Timonium. How can you tell if a tomato is good or bad before purchasing?
Again, if it's split or if it has any signs of aging, if it's wrinkled or if it's too underripe, because it's not going to go that far for ripeness off the vine. So I think those are the things that you're looking for. It needs to be pretty. You want the fruit to look good and smell good.
And here's a controversial question from Nick in Baltimore.
Oh, goody. All right.
When making tomato sauce, do you add sugar to cut the acidity?
I don't. What do you do, Tony?
I choose ripe tomatoes.
I wouldn't add sugar.
The only thing I ever will do is if with cherry tomatoes that are a little bit tart, if I'm going to roast them for a sauce, I'll roast them a little bit to get more sweetness out of them. If I have any sometimes I like to add a little bit of jalapeno as part of the seasoning for the tomatoes. I'll also add a little bit of local like wildflower honey or something just to kind of balance that little bit of heat out. When I'm trying to get heat with tomatoes a little bit, I end up balancing it with sugar, but not that you need to choose ripe tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
that have good natural
sweetness. Well, and also the difference between you and me is that I would put butter in my tomato sauce to finish. So that also helps to round out any sort of acidic edges to the sauce. Oh, yeah. You know it. I'm French. I'm not French, but
well, Lord knows
I
you
cook in the
French
style. So, you know, of course, I also make tomato sauce with great extra virgin olive oil. But one of my personal favorite things to do is to finish it with butter. And that takes care of some of that acidity. So you don't have to add sugar.
Yeah, no question. Well, it balances it out with fat as opposed to balancing it with sugar.
That's right.
So, so what wine are you drinking for the summertime? You spend any time on your porch this summer?
A little bit, and you know me, it's champagne. So I think we should go to you. What are you drinking this summer on your porch?
I'm thinking about people, and I'm thinking about maybe as much as cold champagne is fantastic to drink in the summertime, and a Blanc de Blanc champagne, that's all. Chardonnay is great to drink in the summertime. It does badly with tomatoes, and now we're in the time of the year when I want to eat tomatoes. So I'm thinking, okay, if I'm going to be on my porch, it's going to be warm because it's Baltimore in the summertime, even usually late at night. So what's a white, what's a rosé, what's a red that's going to be refreshing and inexpensive, under $20 in a retail store, that I want to serve cold? Yes, red wine served cold.
Sure.
White wine, the Spanish varietal Albariño, I think is fantastic to serve this time of the year. I would look for that. There's a bottling called Lolo, very easy name to remember.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's $13 or $14 retail. This is delicious and fresh
great.
And easy. There's an Italian varietal, Fiano. There's a producer, Menier, that does a terrific bottling. I think that's in the mid-teens. There's a really, really good winery in Washington State called Airfield, and they have a line of wines that are less expensive than the regular bottlings. From Pinot Gris, yes, the same grape as Pinot Grigio, and Riesling, that's not too sweet, that are great to serve cold, that are super inexpensive and delicious, and I would do those for whites. For a rosé, for rosé, especially with tomatoes, I like some of the Italian rosatos, so Povanera is a good producer for that. And these are things from Puglia. These are pretty big-bodied rosé. It's rosé for a red wine drinker, not rosé meant to be light
it's
and
rosé.
Bright.
Yeah,
the Provençal stuff you want in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, when you get tomatoes on the table and you're this time of the year, it's like you want a tomato salad and a steak or a nice piece of grilled fish or something.
Going to have a lot of flavor.
Yeah. The rosé that's going to go with that is the big-bodied stuff from the south of Italy. And red wine, honestly, Dolcetto. Dolcetto, you know, punchy, has a little tannin. Really good, almost blue fruit. Brezza is a good producer, mm-hmm. Brezza. That out of your refrigerator within 20 minutes is close to cellar temperature anyway, especially in the conditions here.
That sounds so refreshing.
But that's a big blue fruited, almost mm-hmm. crunchy red wine that is not too tart but has enough acid for tomatoes.
Well, it's good to know of a red that you think is that refreshing but still has a lot going on flavor wise.
Yeah, I guess with it's funny. We think you were talking about in the beginning of the show about tomatoes being an American thing, but we often think of it in cooking as an Italian thing right out of the gate.
We do.
And I think because they adopted it so wholeheartedly, many of the, as the cuisine went that way, a lot of the varietals in Italian cooking also head towards.
That makes sense.
You know, head towards the higher acidity and this time of the year. That's really useful.
What, anything else? What about something sweet that you might want to have wine-wise in the summertime?
I think.
Or would you just not really drink sweet wine this time of the year?
Well, it ends up being kind of cloying, you know. That's the thing that, I mean, maybe sparkling that's a little bit sweet.
Okay.
You know, Moscato d'Asti, I mean, that good Moscato d'Asti is sort of like the world's best soda pop. The alcohol is a little bit lower. It's like 7 or 8%, and there's a bit of residual sugar there. It's not as fizzy. It's not as many atmospheres of pressure as champagne or even Prosecco. Prosecco is a pretty good inexpensive bubbles. There's definitely a huge gulf in quality one end to the other, even in the same price points on Prosecco. That's a little bit of a coming thing to watch is going to be wine from Spain. You always hear about wine from Spain called Cava. There's a bunch of really high quality producers that have sort of ganged together producing a wine under a label or a name or a designation called Conca, like a conch shell, Conca. Look like Pepe Reventos and a few other growers. I would look for wine with Conca instead of Cava on the label from Spain. Often 25 and less for bubbles, but super high quality stuff.
That's great.
So, and we're still taking calls for the next few minutes, 410-662-8780 on tomatoes or tomato-related stories or growing tomato disaster stories or...
Let's talk about tomato carpaccio, something for fish. You know, something that's, again, you can use a couple of different varieties of tomatoes.
Something for raw fish, cooked fish.
Cooked. And, you know, you're utilizing, you know, I guess this really is time to stock up on extra virgin because that is exactly what I would do. Maybe some great, if you like olives. And let me tell you, if you grew up on olives that your mom had in the can and you hate olives because of that, that's understandable. You have to branch out and really give great olives a try. Because there's so many wonderful varieties of olives. But to do a great fish dish, maybe with rockfish, or one of our great local fish, or sea bass, or, you know, tuna, a lot of different fish love olives. So you could do tomato carpaccio. So this does take a little skill and definitely, again, a very sharp knife.
Most of those fish are pretty good flavor. Olives have pretty good flavor.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, thinly slice the tomatoes as beautifully as you can. Lay them out on the plate. Cover the whole plate. And drizzle a little bit of extra virgin, a little bit of kosher salt, freshly ground black pepper. And now, you know, it's up to you. Maybe you're growing some herbs out in your garden. Perhaps you do have fresh basil, which I would highly recommend. You know, maybe even tarragon, depending on what the fish is. You could put marjoram on the plate, which would be really beautiful. I know one time you did something a long time ago with the buds of the marjoram plant that was so good.
Pickled them, essentially made capers out of... And the marjoram flowers.
And that's the other thing you could put on the plate. You say capers, you could put tiny capers on the plate. So the, like, Niçoise olives, Nyon olives, Picholine olives, many, many different varieties. And you could do a combination of them if you like, but the capers and just put that great piece of grilled fish, if that's what you're doing, or pan roasting it on top of that plate with the oil, a little bit more oil on the fish. And it's just so, it's so good. It's so bright. It's so fresh. It's, you know, again, it's and just is really speaking to the season.
Olives have such strong flavor, and I always want a fish dish for red wine. There's a dish that I will often make where it's a nice piece of salmon, but salmon that has a skin on it. Sear that skin really nicely in the pan first. This is not a grilled fish. This is in a hot pan, nice mm-hmm. thick pan. Sear it really well. Salt it. Sear it really well. And a lot of black pepper on that to begin. Turn it up and finish it on the other side. More black pepper on it. And what happens as it finishes on the other side is that skin will keep drying and crisping up and almost becomes like a, you know, almost like a peppered, you know, salmon skin, almost mm-hmm. like potato chip sort of business. That connection between the black pepper and some black olives, like Sicilian black oil cured olives that have a really strong flavor, and stronger tomatoes, like you were talking about, the purple crims or black crims or purple Cherokees, you know, some that have pretty good acidity. Really, really interesting stuff. And now you make me want to go home and make.
I know. I'm so hungry right now. It sounds so good.
I'm hungry. What I want to do is cook with James from West Baltimore.
I do too. James, you need to call back because I'd really like to meet you. I'll just throw that out there. So you need to call back with your information.
I thought I was the only person that grew up on, you know, the tomato or tomato and peach pudding kind of, you know, essentially.
So it's southern.
It's a cobbler.
We both have southern roots here. So. That's good stuff. Thanks, James.
Well, thanks for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine and our live program on tomatoes. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
We'll see you next time.